Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Fixed Income Conversation Corner podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, glad to be back with Wesley Falconio, Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. We're also excited to welcome his first appearance on the podcast with us, Kyu Yap, Partner and Portfolio Manager with Lord Abbott. Kyu is responsible for contributing to the management for the firm's taxable fixed income strategies with a multi-sector focus on investment-grade assets. So with that, Wesley, Kyu, thank you for spending some time today with our listeners and our clients. Wesley, I'll pass it over to you to lead today's conversation.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you so much for coming on. You know, this is such a great time to have you on, particularly with everything that's happened, frankly, since the Fed meeting in September. So I really just want to jump into it, given the fact that what we've seen over the past, you know, several weeks. I mean, whether it was the betting markets projecting that you know, Trump would win, to this red sweep that we now have in place. And I was just curious, like, how do you look at these sort of implications that what we know in terms of, you know, this red sweep, in terms of how it might affect, like, fixed income and any type of, I want to say, post-election trends that you might find notable?
Perfect. Thank you, Wesley, and thank you to you and your team for having me today. It really is a great pleasure. It's nice to meet you, and thank you for that question, and certainly happy to get right into it. And obviously, thank you to all the listeners out there. You know, when it comes to the election, a colleague of mine here said something which I thought to be very simple and reasonable, which was that when it comes to the trends of the economy and inflation, what we had going into the election is, you know, what we have coming out of the election. And I think the whole point of his comment was that, you know, the election was an event. We certainly now have some more scenarios to think about as to what the Trump administration, and as you point out, the red sweep imply for the policies that are in place, whether they be fiscal or policies around immigration and tariffs and such. But we don't know just yet. And I think that while we have seen some kind of pockets of idiosyncratic or individual responses when it comes to various industry, take healthcare, for example, with the nomination of Kennedy. We don't know just yet. And at the end of the day, when we think about fixed income, we still have to consider what the yield curve represents. And to us, that means that some part of the time, the yield curve or the 10-year, we'll pick out the 10-year treasury, will be some representation of market expectations around real growth plus inflation and the uncertainty therein. And at other times, the yield curve will be an expression of short-term rates, Fed policy, over some longer time horizon. So, you know, certainly, I mean, we have to acknowledge that there are potentially inflationary aspects to the new administration, and some of that will be priced in. But I think the last thing that we would say is, you know, there has been this fear that given the amount of spending deficits and debt that we could be potentially talking about, that that would cause this significant rise in yields. And I think while that is possible on a short-term basis on supply or demand news, that over the long run, we have to think about what we mentioned earlier. Real growth, inflation, and Fed policy is how we'll kind of interpret the yield curve as we move forward.
We actually agree with that, too. I mean, we've always stated that, and it's been our view that, listen, it's not that we should ignore the deficit. Obviously, we shouldn't, or even the supply that might be coming, you know, down the pipeline and be in the 25, 26. But we always view that as sort of a passenger, not a driver. And the driver of interest rates and the outlook for risk assets is really on the inflation growth and monetary policy side. So we definitely agree with you there. But when you think about, you know, we're, what, a month and a half to year end, and, you know, fixed income is it's gotten a little bit weak-kneed in certain areas, right? I mean, we know that it's been a big, really great in terms of the income earned this past year. But what do you think in terms of this as we sort of make this push into year-end and the last month and a half, how do you think about how things are going to turn out in terms of how we perform to the end of the year? And kind of how are you reflecting on, you know, this past year as a whole?
Yeah. And I think I'm sure everyone, most people know this, and I did take a look today, but if you look at what the 2-year Treasury yield has done year to date, it's basically unchanged. And as we know, the rise in Treasury yields at the 10-year part of the curve has been approximately 40, 50 basis points or so year to date. And there's where you get your wobbly knees, I think you mentioned, which is exactly right. I think that's a perfect analogy. And I think that when I think about, you know, fixed income markets, you know, we've been very focused on the beginning of this rate policy or the Fed policy in terms of an easing environment. And when you look at Treasury yields as far as what happens in the 6 months before that first rate cut versus what happens after that first rate cut of an easing cycle, you generally have Treasury yields decline and you have a steepening in the yield curve. And it's exactly what we got coming into the rate cut. But obviously we've had that wobbliness as we've come out of that rate cut. And when you look at returns of fixed income, my kind of takeaway is this notion that once again, we have a strong risk-adjusted performance of short duration. Like the idea that, especially when we were inverted, but if you think about the potential, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as well, Leslie, if you think about the potential regime that we're in where you just are not compensated to take longer duration risk. Right? And in that type of environment, we've seen a few, short duration fixed income is the better risk-adjusted return profile. While of course, you know, a Barclays or a Bloomberg Ag or a longer duration mandate in an environment where yields are as high as they are now certainly makes sense. But the notion of consistent, better risk-adjusted return in short duration fixed income has been something that I've been thinking about quite a bit again after this year.
You know, we agree. I mean, our outlook has been, you know, to not extend sort of like beyond that five-ish year in terms of duration, right? We don't like that back end of the yield curve. And probably because, to your point, our expectation is the yield curve is going to steepen regardless if you think rates are going up or rates are going down. You know, that back end, in our opinion, would just be the underperformer. So that's why we really like sort of taking on that interest rate risk, in our opinion, you know, around that like 4.5 year. That's kind of where we keep a lot of our portfolio or within that, right? So within that interest rate risk. But when we talk about that, I mean, what's interesting is that, listen, we've seen the market price out a lot of these Fed cuts, given the fact of these rising inflation expectations that we've seen for potential tariffs. But we have no idea what's going to be implemented, what the duration of them is going to be, the magnitude. But the fixed income market's forward-looking, so it's taken the opportunity to price out some of these cuts. But now, but we know that in general, the Fed is in a cutting cycle, right? They started in September, they're 50, they've done another 25. How do you see sort of this cutting cycle, if you will, play out for the remainder of the year and throughout 2025? And do you agree with what the market's pricing in terms of saying like 55, 60, or do you think it's the market is a bit too hawkish heading into 2025 with this projection?
Yeah, you know, and I think I saw you on Bloomberg TV talking about this notion a few months back and the idea of data dependency, because we've gone through, you know, short little periods of before that September 18th meeting, we had economic weakness, we had the yen carry trade volatility issue, and all of that kind of made the market certain that at least 25 basis points was necessary, if not 50. And of course, we got to 50. And now the data has turned around where we, you know, the inflation has been slightly disappointing and growth has turned around and has been very resilient. Labor markets remain resilient. And so it just reminds me that the data is so important as we move forward here. And while we currently only have that 50-50 probability of a 25 basis point cut in December, I do think that over the next 2 or 3 weeks and with the December labor print, that we could get data that moves it one way for certainty, along with some Fed guidance that drives us in one direction. So given how hard it is to call the data over such a short horizon, I'm reluctant to say whether we're going to get that cut or not. And I think that 50-50 probability is right. If I look over 2025 and you think about the dot plot that we received on September 18th and the Feds, the voters basically suggesting that they believed as a group that the long-term, long-run neutral Fed funds rate was somewhere between 2.5 and 3 3 3 and 3 quarters. I'm going to be slightly off there by an eighth or something. But 3 3/4 was the high end of the level of expectation of the Fed funds rate over the longer term. And that is what is priced in right now to be the rate at the end of December 2025. I think that's a little bit high. I think we've moved to the higher end of this range a little bit too quickly, given the very positive data that we've had. So by the end of 2025, would I have more probability in a scenario-based world that the long-term Fed funds rate is somewhere between 3.25, 3.5? I think that's a more reasonable level. And that is one of the reasons that I would be more favorable on fixed income because of what we said earlier. If the yield curve during periods of relative calm can be an expression of short-term rates, and the markets come to believe that the neutral Fed funds rate is 3.25, 3.5, at least by the range that I feel, then the yield curve can gradually move down as the markets accept that policy.
Yeah, we would agree with that. Actually, we agree with that terminal value as well around that 3.25, 3.5. And, you know, there's obviously unknowns in terms of policy and policy implementation. But one thing that we do feel confident about is that when it comes to things like tariffs, obviously you have that one sort of like we call that price increase, right? And then it kind of that prices stay elevated after that. But we don't think it's going to be enough where or something that the Fed doesn't look through. So we look for, you know, the Fed to kind of look through these tariffs. And it's really unknown as to the type of stimulus that actually they're going to achieve. That is obviously could be growth positive, even a little bit in terms of that inflation side. But, you know, we would agree that the market's gotten a little bit too hawkish in our opinion. And we are in the soft landing outlook. We're in the outlook that, you know, growth trends lower, but still stays healthy at, like, you know, 2.5-ish level in 2025. You know, so we think the labor market might be slightly weaker, but not weak. So that's sort of how we're viewing this just to play out in 25. And with that said, while we're not looking for a huge amount of price appreciation from yields coming down, we do think the market is getting a little bit, you know, a little bit too hawkish in terms of its expectations in terms of the Fed path. So when we think about the overall, you know, outlook, there's a lot of volatility that could happen. There's a lot going on geopolitically with, you know, whether it's, and besides the fact, you know, of this red sweep and what might occur in terms of the next year, what do you think about in terms of potential headwinds that fixed income investors should just pay attention to?
I think that, and Leslie, we're going to have to find something to not agree upon because we're batting 1,000 right now, but if I were to kind of think about rates and credit, right? If I think about fixed income and just start at a very high level of rates risk and credit risk, I think that the headwinds on the rate side would be some of what we saw this year, especially at the intermediate part of the curve. And I think that comes from a scenario where inflation reaccelerates. And I think that it does have to reaccelerate, because our thought would be that when it comes to inflation, there is certainly a stickiness to inflation that is driven by shelter, as we all know. And we do think that that could take a couple of years to play out in terms of bringing that back down to more reasonable levels through a housing sector that achieves supply-demand balance. And so in that world, will the Fed message that 2.5% inflation is stable prices and that they're achieving their dual mandate? Because they're going to have to be effective with that messaging to keep the markets in a place where they don't price in too hawkish of Fed policy at the front end. So in that environment where inflation reaccelerates and the Fed does have to become hawkish and does pause or even have to reintroduce new rate hikes, I think that for the rates market, that it would be obviously a very significant headwind. Although for the back end of the curve, I think that you could make an argument that we would see kind of a flight to quality expectation of slow growth recession priced into the back end, which might lead to a yield decline. But I do think that that is a risk, although we view it as minor, that is certainly that we need to keep an eye out for. And then when it comes to credit, I just think it's the fact that when you look at credit risk valuations and investment grade corporates and high yield corporates by any indices, they are at, have been through historical tights over the last 20 years. And they are at very full levels. I think we could go on for a while about making an argument why we think that they could go even tighter than where they are now. But at least relative to history, they are on the tighter end. And so credit spreads are a mean reverting series, so they will widen at some point. I think that that is, to the extent that that scenario plays out in the near term, which is certainly not our base case, but certainly a tail risk event, that would, of course, be a potential headwind as well. So I would kind of think about it in those two ways myself.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, one of the things, too, that we when we think about the allocation card, I mean, we like high quality. And look, I mean, the credit, deep credit embedded sectors have done exceptionally well this year, right? Whether it's high yield, loans, preferreds, they've all done very well this year. And it's not as though we're expecting some sort of catalyst in 2025, but it's really just the amount of protection that you're offered, you know, given the fact that spreads are just so, you know, at, you know, IG was at the 97 tight, high yields, you know, 2007. And we're not, again, we're not expecting some event that really moves spreads wider out to these, you know, potential we're going to have a hard landing or some sort of left tail event. But, you know, one of the things that we look at is obviously that compounding income, and we're often asked, like, if you have this compounding income and the majority of the income is coming from Treasury, why not just own the Treasury? And while that might be true, I think that the benefit of things like IG that we have, and we have agency MBS as well, we think is a great asset class because of its relative value in having this, you know, higher quality liquid type sector, even though, you know, it is very much at the mercy of interest rate volatility that we've seen heighten, you know, prior to this past week. But when you think about, you know, how you are positioning, you know, how are you allocated now? Like, what do you find most attractive?
I think the theme, and I'll say I agree, I think the theme has to be high quality carry. Right? And when in that theme, I think favoring IG over high yield, thinking about the agency mortgage sector, because as volatility begins to return to lower levels in an environment where, because what we're still waiting for is resolution of this inflation trend, this growth trend. And as we near that goal line, and as there is more certainty, the volatility decline will be helpful for all risk assets, especially agency mortgage-backed securities. But I would also add in there, you know, securitized products, focusing on the AAA weighting within both asset-backed securities, commercial mortgage-backed securities, CLOs, where historical default experience has been negligible, if not zero. And the key to being up in quality is, you know, and I think you were alluding to this as well, Leslie, is the idea that we could be in this environment where valuations remain tight. And the most important thing for fixed income is having carry and yield in the portfolio and making it attractive enough relative to just owning a treasury. And that is very doable. But it exactly addresses your question. Why not just do it in the treasury? Because you can get yield through other sectors and you can get high quality yield. And to the extent that there is a risk off event, those higher quality assets will be much more protected from the spread widening that you would see in kind of more beta related products like high yield, emerging markets and such. So, you know, our expectation is in sympathy with yours about a soft landing, keeping yield in the portfolios, perhaps not expecting too much spread compression, but with treasury yields where they are, to still, depending on what part of the yield curve, what type of credits, to be able to get into that 5-6 handle in terms of yield. To us, makes fixed income a very interesting and attractive place. And, you know, we weren't quite there in December of or year end 2023 in terms of yields. We're in a better place now. And I think that some of the scenarios where rate cuts, money market funds finally starting to move and investing in duration and investing in credit, all of that should be very strong for the environment.
We appreciate that. And I think, too, and listen, when we think about the money market funds, as you know, we've got so much cash sitting on the sidelines. There's over $7 trillion of money market funds. And, you know, our expectation is that, you know, over time, you're going to see this constant reinvestment risk that's faced there. And we do believe the yield curve goes upward sloping. We think it remains upward sloping throughout 2025, and we start to finally normalize and stay there. So, well, you know, our view is the same, that, you know, the higher quality, whether it's agency MBS, IG corporates, even some of these, even, you know, municipals have had a tough time with this interest rate volatility and the amount of supply that they've seen. So I really appreciate, you know, your time. It's been a great conversation and it's very timely. And as we turn the year, I look forward to getting your insights after January 20th, to see just somehow these policies are implemented, or we have kind of an idea of maybe what the next steps might be with the new administration. So thanks so much, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.